Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Renee Alberts, guest host of Prosody, and my guest is the poet Scott Silsby. Scott Silsby's work has appeared in the Notre Dame Review, Third Coast, Kitchen Sink, and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. His first book, Unattended Fire, was published by Six Gallery Press, and his second book will be published by Low Ghost Press. He is currently the managing editor of The New Yinzer. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Renee.
Thank you for being here today.
Sure, my pleasure.
Can you start us off with some poems?
Sure. All right, this one's called Imagine Pittsburgh. Tonight, I'm driving up the hill to Stanton Heights, to where the streets are named after romantic poets, and the walls of the houses are made from CD box sets, and comic books are stacked 50 or 60 tall on tables. Up here, there are endless LPs to spin on the turntable. You haven't heard Brother Jack McDuff's Home Cookin'? Put that Neil Young record on again. It sounded so damn good. This here is a small sanctuary from whatever is outside that door. I'll loan you my copy of 100 Things Steelers Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And no, I never listened to that record, The Lost Weekend by Danny and Dusty, but I'll write that down. I've had too much whiskey, but at least I'm not far from home. You can tell it's an early pressing because of George's shadow. I didn't think to mention it, but that must be a book club edition. We could go on and on like this, but I think I'm overstaying my welcome, so I'll go. Driving home, I imagine Pittsburgh as a city of small collections, books and records and comics and films. I never did make it very far into Rinaldo and Clara. If you've got some time, I'll stop up another evening. I'm still a Jagov, but I love it. We were at Take a Break on the third level where they keep the jukebox and the pool tables when a guy said that, looking me in the eye while he performed some twisted erotic dance with a pool cue. He danced around to the other side of the table, and I sipped off my tall Yuengling while he asked the woman he was playing, "Am I the Stripes or am I the other one?" All right, this is called The River Underneath the City. I was half drunk and exhausted, and the bar was loud with pool and jukebox noise and Saturday drunks. But I think I overheard Bob telling Moody about the fourth river, the river underneath the city, and about how the Mayans believe the point where the four rivers converge to be a portal that will take us all somewhere else later this year. Just then, the jukebox inexplicably ripped into an old Dizzy Gillespie hard bop number, which seemed to confuse and bewilder a number of the people in the bar. 5 minutes into it, a woman shouted, "Does anybody know how long this song is?" I wondered how many people in the bar knew about the river underneath the city. It's strange how people can live somewhere and not even know what is under their feet. No stranger, though, than how we walk around every day and don't know those around us. It's funny how we think of each other, but how little we really know about each other. I didn't know much more than the girl's name, but I can still remember her at the cage, can see her in the booth, singing off key along with a song she played on the jukebox, Greetings to the New Brunette. I wonder if she's still in Chicago. Sunday's a bad day to get bad news in Pittsburgh. News comes in over the phone and it's no good. John says, "I hope it's in the very distant future." That was all any of us could really hope for. The other night, we were just three idiots with too much Yuengling in us cruising the Electric Valley, going over and under and around the Westinghouse Bridge looking for more to drink. My doctor tells me to shoot for 2 beers a night, which is sometimes enough, except on nights when it isn't. Everything around us looked fantastic with so much beer in me. I guess that's why Kurt calls this the town of constant fireworks. The barmaid at the Electric Avenue Cafe, a Suzanne with a Z, I think, started talking about dogs, which turned the conversation racist. It feels like we can't drink anywhere these days. One night, Bob and I went to the subalpine to watch hockey and shoot some pool, and when Bob broke for our first game, he cracked them so hard I thought the little old lady playing a touchscreen game on a stool next to us was going to have herself a heart attack. "I thought somebody fell down," she said. "Not yet," I thought, saving that for later. All right, and then this one's called Let's Get Lost. Last night is behind me. I'm sitting on the balcony of my girlfriend's apartment. She is showering so we can go for a drive. I suggested a walk, but she said, I'm not much good for walking today. I'm sitting here and Chet Baker is playing and singing through the screen door, and I'm reading Eliot's Four Quartets, and I'm sifting through the remnants of the party that took place here last night. Everything feels pretty good. It's a beautiful, cold, but bright day here. It's Shadyside, and old men are jogging by on the sidewalk wearing earphones, young men in ties carrying flowers. Eliot is saying, only through time, time is conquered. And Chet is singing, time after time, so lucky. The rolling rock is cold down my throat, and the air is cool in my nostrils. Light is such an amazing thing in Pittsburgh. On the bright red bricks of the house across the street, and hitting the water tower on the faraway hillside, barely visible between the rooftops of the houses, but there, a presence.
If you've just tuned in, you are listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, and my guest is the poet Scott Silsby, reading from his new book, Unattended Fire. I think that one of the things that especially the poem, The River Underneath the City, touches on, that your poetry seems to be concerned with, is the idea of the ordinary and what's behind it. You have that line about people, it's funny how people will live in a place and not know what's under our feet. And then there's a sort of meditation on knowing the people around you. And also in Imagine Pittsburgh, that sunset that's described. And these are all sort of ordinary moments, but the poems are recognizing them in a really intentional way. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, I guess for me, poetry is kind of that moment of recognition, or the poem really is that moment of recognition where life kind of jumps out a little bit to you. It doesn't always happen. You know, a lot of people, including myself, you know, just kind of go through life don't necessarily think about what's happening or what's going on around them. But to me, poetry and the poem is a kind of stopping to notice what's happening or you know, notice these moments.
Mm-hmm. I think that part of what is effective about the poems, making those moments kind of real, is that they're grounded in these really great descriptive details. Some of the ones that I caught just in those last few poems were, you know, the quotes that you have from the people who appear in the poems. You know, am I the stripes or am I the other one? You have even things like the screen door or the red of the bricks. So can you talk about, I think that those details, they expose a lot about the poem, about the speaker, about the people who they're describing. How do you gather those? How do you go about working them into a piece?
Well, I carry around a little notepad, and that helps to remember things and to capture things. I'd say that for me, there are a number of things that really inspire me. One is just images. I really like tangible objects for my poems. But another thing is language, and what people say is a lot of time what I'm writing in my little notepad. Mm-hmm. Just because I find humor or I find, something interesting in how people articulate things, and especially in bars when they've been drinking.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit more about bars, I think. But in the meantime, can you read us some more poems?
Sure.
Thanks.
I think I've got some more bar poems. So. All right, this is called Stinkies. And the first line is inspired by something Jason Baldinger said. So, Stinkies. The food at Stinkies is actually not that bad. I had an order of stinky fries with my beer and Beam while the girl tending bar, the one with a Roman numeral on her neck, sang along with the country music on the digital stereo that sounded more to me like pop music than country though maybe it was pop and not country at all. It's an imp and iron kind of bar, lining up roofers and plumbers, heating and cooling guys around the U-shaped bar in the middle of the room. You wouldn't think they'd be able to cram 13 televisions in here, but they are working on it. Most of the TVs display car crashes and people running out into heavy traffic. "What would possess you to do that?" asked the guy next to me. Still, this doesn't seem like the kind of place you go to eat on purpose. It seems more like the kind of place you would go not to eat on purpose, so as not to cancel out the effects of the alcohol. The guy down the bar from me is drinking Crown Royal doubles with his Yuengling draughts, and when he finishes one, the young barmaid asks him, "You want a double again?" Asks him as if impressed, and he simply says, "Please." All right, this is called Breakfast at Rocky's. I order the 2-egg special, order them over easy, and think of how John says that poets always order their eggs over easy because they like how it sounds. The motherly waitress asks me, "White or wheat?" Calls me honey and says, "Coffee will be right up." When it arrives, the coffee mug my coffee is in looks like it has been here since around 1952. Rocky's is a small room with a small kitchen behind a 5-seater bar. The chef has a dangly cross earring. There are framed puzzles on the walls, plastic flowers on the tables, and VHS tapes on sale for $1 a pop. The sign on the front door says there are no restrooms and that strollers are strictly forbidden. A small radio in the corner proclaims, "There's going to be a heartache tonight, I know, and whoa, 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 listen to the music." Someone asks for a newspaper, and my waitress says, "Why would you want to read that? It's all bad news." She is right, and the conversation turns to the Pirates, who are dropping a series against the Orioles. "Who hit the home runs?" a customer says, and she says, "Walker and Tabata." Then there is talk about food. The chef with the cross earring says, "I could put anything on that bun." Talks about making a Polish feast, and a customer says, "Wait a minute, I'm not Polish." My breakfast arrives in less than 2 minutes. It is 2 eggs over easy, home fries, a stack of 3 heavily buttered pieces of wheat toast, and 2 tubs of Heinz jelly. The bill is $5.50. When I hand my waitress $8, she says, "You gave me too much." And I say, "Keep it." When I get outside, I swear I see the Fox, the Man, Sinatra step on the 54 and disappear, cursing kids these days and their damn bicycles. I saw Elvis at the Family Dollar on Penn. This was no impersonator, this was the king himself. He wore big sunglasses, but no white polyester jumpsuit, just a plain white V-neck t-shirt showing off his chest hair. He had slicked his remaining gray hairs into a comb-over, a hairstyle that reminded me of my maternal grandfather. He didn't seem to mind the bad lighting, crying babies, or the women beating their children in the aisles over candy bars and crappy toys. I was buying mouthwash, and he was at the register across the way from me. He was getting Nutter Butters, Lay's potato chips, zebra cakes, some Jif peanut butter, and a Yoo-Hoo. I kept trying to process how he might have ended up in Garfield in Pittsburgh, and I couldn't help but stare. He laid his money down, said a hushed "thank you" to the clerk, and the bell on the door made a single, almost magical ping on the way out. I held on to my mouthwash and watched him shuffle through the cigarette butts, the fast food drive-through remnants, and buzzing flies of the parking lot, and I could not imagine where he was off to. Maybe Kalamazoo. All right, here's another bar poem. One night at Duke's. Every passing day means one or two lost memories. Duke's Bar wasn't much to talk about, really, but I can remember a good night there, scouring the juke, trying to find us some greasy hits, all hunched over next to the life-size John Wayne cardboard stand-up. The beer was cheap and cold, and the tables weren't too wobbly. I can't remember what we talked about at all, Chris. I can remember being drunk enough to approach a girl I found sexy, though once I started talking with her, I realized that I had nothing to say. Instead, I got her some free cigarettes and retreated back to my beer. So Duke's Bar is long gone now, replaced by 2 chain burrito shops and a sub place. That girl is long gone too, but I do still get postcards on occasion from the Marlboro Cigarette Company.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, and my guest is the poet Scott Silsby. Okay, so let's talk about the bars.
Okay.
Why are we always in bars? What's going on in the bars that the poems keep happening there?
Well, it's just, I mean, it's entertainment for me, mostly. It's like, it's better than television. You go to a bar like Take a Break, and, you know, just these characters drinking are, you know, just their entertainment and fun.
And I wonder, too, maybe I'm overthinking it, but it seems like in bars there's sort of an element of ritual because you have, like, the familiarity of, like, what happens there and who's there and you know, who you're hanging out with. But you also have that element of, like, spontaneity with people acting wild and dancing around pool cues.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there is definitely that ritual to it that I also like. I don't know. I like and there's a certain vibe in Pittsburgh bars that I think is unique to itself too, which is one reason I find myself writing.
What's that vibe?
I don't know. I mean, it's the same feeling you get when you watch like a Steelers game with a group of people. It's just this. There's a camaraderie, I think.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure you get it in bars everywhere, but it's the certain vibe you get from Pittsburgh bars, I think, is unique to Pittsburgh.
That sort of touches on something else I wanted to ask you about, which is this very familiar tone in the address of your poems. The voice of the poems is very friendly. They're often discussing friendship. And I think that there's a way to write poems about Pittsburgh or about bars or about the ordinary in a way that elevates it and makes it sound very poetic with like a capital P.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that your poems are doing that. Your poems, they are talking about things like women beating their children over crappy toys and mentioning like Elvis's chest hair. Like there's something very unpretentious about them.
I think that there was a point, I did a master's in poetry, and so I think there was a point where I intentionally wanted to get away from a kind of pretentious poetry that I saw a lot of, this kind of academic, poetry. I think I intentionally tried to get to a more conversational, more direct kind of poetry.
Yeah.
That was about things and people.
So if that's a conscious move on your part, how does that work in the writing of it? How do you make it more, how do you write that?
Well, it's mostly just trying to make it about things and people that, that I know and that I, you know, that I'm a part of, and, getting not as much in my head as in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to get I just try and attack the poem with real things and real people, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, and I think that real attention to groundedness makes those moments when you do, you know, imagine Pittsburgh, or you do go into what you might call like a more elevated or a more in your head space. Feel more organic, I think, and feel more like you've arrived at something as a reader when you're in the poem. Can you read us some more?
Sure.
Thanks.
This is called Big Star. We were heading back from this all-night dance party on the south side called Socialism, and I had had too much to drink, but I was driving everyone home, which was dangerous, especially since they were all rolling around in the seatless back of the van. Except Jenny, who was up front with me and who would touch my arm whenever I would start to run a red light. Mostly all I remember is how we were blasting Alex Chilton's voice, maybe to keep us awake or something, and how we were cruising over bridges and through tunnels, and I took us out of our way to go down the overgrown alley from Oakland to Polish Hill, and Bad Brad got out of the car at a red light and I didn't know if he didn't like my driving or if he was drunk or if what, but we kind of had to let him go. We were all heading home anyway. Thomas was in the back shouting, 23, 23, and I didn't know if he wanted track 23 or if he was drunkenly requesting 13, so I forgot about it and put on a tape that started with the dam's new rose. And then I drove everyone home, and when I dropped Thomas and Jenny off, I think Jenny came around to the driver's side and kissed my cheek, but that might have been a different night altogether. All right, this is called Tull Fan Jam. On the radio broadcast of the Pirates game today, the guy with the slick voice was promoting the Fan Jam, featuring an R&B group from the 90s that most of us had mainly forgotten about. And the color man, an ex-Buck, said, "There any chance of getting Jethro Tull in here?" And the guy with the slick voice said, "I hope not." And the guy said, "Okay." Red Sky at Night. Hank Williams is singing on Bob's new outdoor stereo, a three-piece thrift store job with a 1999 sticker still on it. The sun's going down all red and orange behind the trees and to the west towards town. And already stars and planets are starting to light up over the hills of forest and forest hills. We are out on the back deck, just me and Bob and Hank and the occasional snap or pop from the record on its way through the grooves of Lost Highway or Cool Water. There's plenty of beer in the fridge and also fresh cherries Amy bought, and we spit the pits over the edge of the deck, and I imagine that we are planting cherry trees in the yard. It's almost time for me to head home, let the clutch out, and ride all the way back down to Garfield to Paulette's dinner that's waiting for me. I know I'll pass under the parkway just as the sky is breaking into its most intense statement. Tonight, it's beautiful out. Tomorrow, it'll be even better. I am in Pittsburgh. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, and my guest is the poet Scott Silsby. Scott, can you talk about the humor in your poems? You have some really funny moments, like the food at Stinky's is actually not that bad, and some of the characters that show up, the sort of, you know, ridiculous behavior of people driving drunk and falling out of cars and things. Can you talk about how you work humor into your writing?
Sure. I think that one of the things I write in my little notepad mostly is stuff that I find humorous or entertaining. And I think it's another thing that I intentionally have tried to work in, partly like how I was talking about, to avoid pretension. I think I want my poems to be entertaining, because I think a lot of times poems can be really drab, and they can over intellectualize things, and so they get away from this sense of entertainment that I think poems can accomplish, that I enjoy. I like it when poems are a sort of entertainment. Mm-hmm. So I know that I really enjoy a sense of humor when I'm reading poems. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess it's just something that I've tried to work in.
Okay. We have time for a few more. Can you read us some more?
Yeah, sure. All right. This is called After the Show. I like to tell myself we are fighting for the greater good of the world outside when we put our plastic cups in the precise middle of the room and raise them a bit so that everyone could see them, and the stereo turns its volume down, and Thomas made a toast to the fires of friendship, and we all laughed a little. There was something outside that we didn't want to let in. And it wasn't the cold rain that was maybe trying to tell us that the summer was ending, that the kids were already back in town with rental trucks and overbearing parents. Maybe it was something more intangible, like time or responsibility, something we were trying to outrun because it didn't understand us. It wanted us to be something we didn't want to be. And maybe the only defense we knew, the only ammunition we had against this uncertain enemy, was our certain foolishness. Ridiculous shots made in apartment kitchens. Crushed pills snorted up the nose that allowed dancing to disco and Motown until morning. Only by living like this, saving ourselves from whatever was out there, Just beyond the windows and fire escape, were we able to make good of the world? And were we able to help it in some way? If only by setting an example for it, with a night of unmediated extremism, constructed out of our separate narratives, culminated and then receding, as if to say, we're here, we're alive, we'll be here again. This one's called Middle West Weather. For a minute or so, neither of us said anything. I'm sorry, she said finally. I guess this weather is making me a little melancholy. I made a joke about the color of the sky, hoping and succeeding to get a laugh out of her. It's not a bad thing, she said. It just means that I don't have that much to say. I nodded. The birds and the trees around us made their noises. I thought about saying something about the birds talking for us, but I stopped myself short. There were kids playing lacrosse in the park, yelling each other's names and running around in little circles. When do you leave? I asked, trying to sound positive. Our lease is up at the end of the month, she said, and then smiled weakly. What are your... She paused, rethinking her question, I figured. Do you have any plans to go anywhere, to move anywhere, or... She didn't finish her sentence, but blushed. I'm going to Houston in a couple months, I said, to see Jay get married. That's it, though. I'm here for now. She nodded, the silence again. I thought about how she had blushed and shook her head in disbelief an hour before, when I had given her a book as a gift. I smiled and swallowed hard. Well, I guess I'd better get going, she said. Yeah, I said, and slowly rose to my feet. And then we walked out of the park, walked to her car, again without words, letting the birds around us articulate the little and big things we weren't saying.
The poetry of Scott Silsby. Thank you for being here, Scott.
Sure, my pleasure, Annie.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment newsweekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time, Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.